about their ideas, opinions, and methods.
Hi, I'm Mark Young. For today's episode, I spoke with the alt-pop chameleon Jax Anderson. In the podcast, she discusses her genre-agnostic approach to making music, how she tackles universal themes as a queer artist on her new concept album, and the creative inspiration she found while on a cross-country musical road trip. Jax Anderson is next. Hi, Jax. Thanks for joining me today. You mentioned you were recently on the road. How was your trip?
Oh, it was fantastic. I started in Detroit, went down to the southern United States and cruised on over all the way to the West Coast. And I stopped along beautiful locations and was able to write music along the way. And it was fantastic.
And you took some of our gear on that trip. So it's actually the mic you're holding in your hand right now, the MV7. And what was exactly the goal? Was it you wanted to use it for inspiration along the way, or was it just a lucky coincidence and you thought you could be creative on the road?
Yeah, my intention was to try to take myself out of my comfort zone, which my comfort zone is typically my own studio space or my own bedroom or any kind of place that feels familiar. And so one thing about touring is that you rarely get a chance to stop and really see the places that you're passing through. So my intention was to write music in every single city that I've been wanting to check out. So and like stop by like a couple of national parks along the way and gain inspiration from the things around me, from the visual side of what America can offer. And it's really beautiful. I think a lot of people, at least for me, I didn't realize how many amazing locations exist across the United States. And so I wanted to kind of have that experience in every type of geographical location. So it was really cool. It was really beautiful.
How long were you on the road in total?
I was on the road for about 2 weeks.
Okay. Was there a particular stop which you feel was a true highlight for you creatively? Not just that it was a nice place to check out, but it was actually that you had some kind of resonance there that really spoke to you when you were making music?
Yeah, I stopped in, I think it's in Arizona at Petrified Forest, which is, it was absolutely gorgeous. They have these like mini ranges that are just so colorful and beautiful. And the landscape was just, it was just incredible. So I had a setup, I took a van out there. And so I had a setup in like the back of my van to where it acted as if it was like a treated, it almost felt like it was a treated vocal booth. I put a bunch of blankets back there and things. Okay. And I was able to just like open up the back of the van and record out of the back of the van. And it was amazing. Hmm. It was unlike any other recording experience that I've had. And it was nice to be able to like capture the sounds of the parks and capture the sounds of just the atmosphere. And yeah, that Petrified Forest was 10 out of 10, would do again.
So it wasn't just you actually singing or recording, playing music or whatever. It was you actually used it to record like original audio field recording. You actually brought that into the new album as well?
Yeah, a couple of like, I'm a big fan of using ambiance as white noise. Mm-hmm. I think it's a lot of the times people will have hidden white noise in the background as like a synth or something. I think it's amazing to put like different like bird sounds or like wind sounds or things like that just tucked in the way in the back where it's almost like a subconscious note. Uh-huh. And yeah, it was awesome to be able to get like different sounds of water and different sounds of, you know, throwing rocks and even just like, again, birds chirping are all throughout the record, which was a really cool experience.
I want to get into the record a little bit in a little bit, but I mean, maybe you could just walk us through what was your rig then? You said you had the vocal booth van with a beautiful view out the back. I mean, do you just have a laptop? You had an acoustic guitar, electric guitar, you know, maracas. What did you take with you? What was your rig like?
Yeah, so my setup typically is pretty mobile because I really like to be able to, whenever I'm working with other artists, I like to meet them in their environment. Because I like to work with artists in places that they're most comfortable. Mm. And so with this record, a lot of the songs have features on them. A lot of the songs were, it just made more sense for me to have a mobile setup. So I had, so I used my laptop and then I have an interface that I bring with me. I use an Apollo Aero because it doesn't have to be plugged in. It can just kind of be mobile. And then I use the MV7 mic that I'm using now. And that's pretty much all I use. Like I brought acoustic guitar, I brought my bass, I brought a bunch of things that I didn't basically everything but a drum set.
Okay.
So I had like a MIDI keyboard, stuff like that. And so it was great using this mic because it's such a directional mic that it's like, it was able to capture, it was able to like drown out any of the extra stuff around. So I wasn't worried the whole time of like, is there too much wind? Is there too much happening around me? It was nice to be able to have that freedom to just record anywhere.
Mm. Like I said, I want to get to the album, but maybe we can take it back a bit. Is there a moment you can look back and you say that's what set you on your path as a musician? Some people have some piano teacher who tortured them at five or, you know, or something like that. Do you have a moment you could look back and say, that's where I started along the path where I am today?
Yeah, I think, so when I was in middle school, my oldest brother played drums in a punk band, and my parents were very supportive of him playing punk music. And I think what started me out was going to those shows and seeing that energy and seeing that raw, honest feeling that punk really offered. And the community that surrounded it was fascinating to me, because people that were into punk music, it's a lifestyle. And I thought that that was incredible, that you could find that with music, that you can find the feeling and you could find the community and you can find a place to belong. And so I think that specifically is what kind of started me out as far as like a generalized experience, because he played a ton of shows one year. And so I would go every weekend to different like punk venues and just watch my older brother play. And it was so sick.
Yeah. I took a listen to your songs prepping for this interview, and what immediately struck me was the diversity. You're talking about punk now. That was maybe your seminal influences. And what really struck me was the diversity of musical styles that you play. And is that really by design? Would you consider yourself a genre agnostic at this point, or?
Ooh, I like that phrase. Genre agnostic.
Yeah,
I like that.
Feel free to run with that one. Yeah, take it.
I love that. Yeah. I've never heard that before, but that I resonated with that. As soon as you said, I'm like, yes, okay. Yes.
Yeah.
I think for me, I've always been very fascinated by authenticity. So as long, the music that I listen to has always been all over the map. I've never really stuck to like one style of music. I've always just looked for things that were genuine. And I've always looked for artists that were authentically telling their story. And so for me, I think I create in that manner too, where some days I feel like writing a folk song, and some days I feel like writing something to a hip hop beat, and some days I feel like making an indie pop dance jam. I try not to box myself in to a certain subset that I like need to belong to. And it allows me to kind of create all over the map. So yeah, I would definitely say that I'm genre agnostic at this point.
I mean, your latest project, Songs for Every Condition, it's a concept album. You're releasing thematic chunks over time. Can you tell everybody in podcast land about the idea behind it?
Yeah, I would go into these basically over 2020 and a lot of 2018 and 2019. I would go into these modes where I would write a very specific style of music around what I viewed as a feeling, so or a condition. So it's things like angst. It's things like happiness, or you know, being heartbroken or being in love. I would just like hyper focus on certain words and make art around them. And so with these, I wanted to couple two songs together and release them as like almost like a mini package or a mini EP in themselves, that kind of led up to an ultimate goal of it being a song for songs for every condition. Because I think I'm writing about the human experience, and I'm writing about a lot of different things. So I wanted to really hyper focus on the idea of writing about every part of the human condition.
Right.
So I felt like Songs for Every Condition felt like a good, every time I said it, my eyes light up and I feel really good about it. So I'm excited for it to release. It's releasing this fall, and it's been really cool. I've been releasing it in two song chunks. So two singles per month until ultimately the album gets released.
And you say the whole album will be complete, so to say, in September? Do you have the actual date?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the album is out in September, and it's been really cool. It's been a really interesting experiment to be able to allow myself to release this much music this often. And it also is just a good experiment in allowing myself that creative freedom to write about anything that I wanted. Because for me as an artist, ultimately my goal is to make art. For people that are like me, which are typically the queer community, and like the, you know, typically I'm writing for the queer community. And my other goal is to make art and release it often. So it's nice to be able to accomplish these goals and really lean into the idea of talking about my queer relationships and talking about my queer friendships. One of the songs on the record that I just released, Say I Do, is like, I wrote a song for like queer weddings because I don't know of any that exist. And I think it's very rare that you hear of an intentional song about marriage that's in a queer context.
Right.
And so being able to just like lean into things like that, which I think previous me would have tried to like force myself into this box.
Okay.
I kind of just wanted a way to release myself from that box and allow myself to see what I can do.
You've collaborated with your brother a lot over the years, is that right? And there was one song, I think he was working on it from a straight perspective of a man who's married, but you heard it and said, this has got to be a queer anthem. Yeah. I thought that was really cool. It was exactly what you were talking about, how you're taking, I guess, universal themes, but you're making them relevant to you and to what exactly that you're trying to express to your community, right?
Yeah, that song is She Don't Love Me. And so my brother wrote it at a time where, which honestly, this happens to a lot of my straight friends, a lot of my queer friends. I think it's just a universal concept of like marriages, they aren't exempt from adversity, you know? And it's the kind of deal where he came to me when he was having a hard time in his marriage. He was having a rough patch, which is such a common thing for so many people.
Yeah.
But it's something that no one ever freaking talks about. And so he came to me with just the line, "She don't love me anymore." And it was kind of in this realm where that's how he felt. And I think that's a very genuine feeling that a lot of people feel in relationships, is that sometimes you feel like, does this person still love me? Do I love this person? Does this make sense? And ultimately he was able, that conversation, that kind of like song and conversation opened up a lot for him and his wife. And they were able to get past the love patch, and they are the most in love that I've ever seen. They're currently on a cute trip to New York. That's just like the most adorable thing. And I think him bringing that to me, I mean, I've been through heartbreak as well. So it's like, I know that feeling of like, just feeling hopeless and feeling like there's nothing else that you can do to save it, but there has to be something else because you still want to try and you still want to give it a go. And that's just a very universal concept. And I think with this record specifically, I wanted to take universal concepts and kind of filter them through a queer lens, just because I'm a queer person. So obviously everything that I do is going to be through a queer lens, but I wanted to really hyper focus on that. So I ended up getting my good friend Lauren Sanderson to do a feature on it, and she absolutely killed it. And I switched it from being something that was meant to be for a straight couple to a queer context,
right.
Which felt very authentic because my brother is a straight man and I'm a very queer woman. So it's, it makes sense that it has that coupling.
So speaking of Lauren Sanderson, you collaborate with a lot of notable artists on this record, Lynn Gunn, Mr. Wives, Curtis Roach, among many others. And I was curious, when you work with so many people on one specific record, how does that usually work for you? Do you find someone suitable for a particular song that you're working on, or does that creative partner lead where a track may eventually go?
So the way that I presented this album was that the album was pretty much, a lot of these songs were already written. And I was like, you know what? I just feel like this person would sound great on this track. And I've always created with my friends, and I've always one thing I love about art is how collaborative it can be. And how, like, for me, I always want to get all of my friends involved with me, because I just think that's so much more fun than creating art on my own. And so with these songs, I basically just hit up all of my friends that I've either toured with or just have become close with over the years. And we're just like, hey, do you want to get hop on this song? And 9 times out of 10, they said yes. And I think overall, it added a new flair to it that I thought was very fascinating. Because I think anytime you work with other artists, you learn. Specifically, I think the only artist that like I sat in the room with it, because all of it was done over lockdown, but the only artist I sat in the studio with was Kay Flay. And being able to just see the way that she works was amazing. Like, she is such a good writer. Just straight up, the way that she handles herself lyrically and melodically, she's extremely intentional. And I learned so much from that lesson. So that was part of it too, is that I just wanted to learn from these artists that I've always looked up to. which is, it's just fun. It's just fun being able to create a record and have some of the people that you've looked up to that like are also your friends be able to give their input and kind of give that different flair to each track.
Mm. Speaking of flair, you've been based in Detroit for several years and, you know, from Motown to techno, it's a place with a very proud and diverse musical heritage. And I was just curious to get your perspective of what the scene is like these days.
I mean, I can only speak from my perspective and the community that I'm in, because I think Detroit has so many amazing artists and amazing communities that like, I don't want to speak for the other communities because they have the voice themselves and they've spent all of their time and years developing their own scenes that are incredible. So I guess for my specific community, which is typically based around a studio space called Assemble Sound, we typically are very much just like, hey, if you want to write a song with me, come in and write a song with me. Whether you're a hip hop artist, whether you're an indie artist, like whatever you are, come on in. If you're a singer, songwriter, folk artist, if you're just a guitar player or a trombone player, who cares? Let's have a session. And that's something that I've really loved over the years, is that ability to just create with everyone. And I think it's allowed me to be somewhat of a chameleon in my songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I mean, for me and my Detroit scene, yeah, it's incredibly diverse, but I know that there are other scenes that are popping off and doing amazing things as well.
Mm. So after this truly bizarre COVID year, what do you have on tap? You got the album coming out in September. Do you already have tour dates lined up, or is that more of a wait and see situation right now?
That's, for me, it's more of a wait and see. I've spent the better half of a decade touring.
Okay.
And so I'm really enjoying being able to develop other creative sides. I've been directing a lot,
okay,
a lot of different music videos for different friends and for myself. So with every release, I'm filming and editing and directing a video for myself. So that's been a wonderful challenge. I already have some songs lined up that I'll be releasing in the new year after this record.
Mm.
So it's like, for me, it's just, again, my goal is to make art and release it often. So that's my intention. And so shows are a bit more on the back burner these days.
Yeah.
I have a couple of little one-offs that I'll be doing and announcing here in the next couple months. But yeah, I'm really excited for this record to be out. I'm really excited for people to hear it in its completion. It's going to be great.
Great, Jax. Well, we definitely look forward to hearing that. And thanks so much for taking the time. And in particular, thanks for letting us join you on your musical road trip this spring.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a blast.
That was Jax Anderson, and this has been Signal Path. This episode was recorded remotely with the MV7 podcasting microphone. Thanks very much for listening. Hope you tune in again next time.